40% of the Haitian population is under the age of 14, and even before last month's devastating earthquake, many of them were at risk. Joining me to discuss why Haiti's children are so vulnerable are Carol M. Stern, the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, and Manuel Fontaine. He's a child protection expert working in Haiti for UNICEF. Very pleased to welcome them to today's underreported segment. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Manuel, what are the main problems children in Haiti are facing in the aftermath of the earthquake? Is it getting food, water, medicine?
I would say all of the above. It's obviously getting shelter because many of them are still outside. It means, of course, getting water and food. And then it means getting some form of certainly protection, in the sense of protection from possible risks of violence or separation from their parents. Many of them might have been separated. Finding their parents again, finding someone who cares for them. And then after that, finding some normalcy through education, all their activities. So it's basically getting their surviving and getting them back, their life back to normal.
Is there a lot of dust because of the falling buildings?
Is there a lot of
dust? Because I would assume it's hard to breathe, especially for young lungs.
It is a very hot time of the year and very dusty, and so it is difficult, obviously, and especially for people living outdoor most of the time.
How is the cleanup going now?
It's moving forward, but it's a long, long process, as you can imagine, and of course the focus has been on survival of people, so it's basically providing what they need to survive, and also on finding the dead and burying them and trying to move along and cope. So it's a long process, and of course the cleaning up is one of the elements of it. Life seems to be somehow getting back into the streets, but it's, there's such a long way to go in many aspects.
Carol, UNICEF's headquarters were damaged in the quake. How has that affected the response of the quake's victims?
Well, the staff on the ground are phenomenal. You find that in every country. We did have 100 staff on the ground. We've been there since 1949 because we're an organization that doesn't just come in the wake of an emergency, but we're there and will be there until Haiti's able to stand on our own feet. Obviously, it's horrific when your own staff are also experiencing the disaster. All 100 are accounted for, but frankly, I don't know if any of them were freed or spared from personal loss as a result of the earthquake.
And how many children has UNICEF been able to help so far? Do you know?
I don't have a head count on a specific number of children. I know over 9,000 kids have already been registered and checked in. We, one of the things we do in the wake of an emergency is we create child-friendly spaces, the places where we can try to bring some normalcy back to their lives. They will get the shelter that Manuel is talking about. They will get access to water and sanitation and to the protection, as we've been, reading about in the papers, for child protection being a pretty big issue right now.
Well, many aid organizations are working in Haiti. Their efforts in regard to children being coordinated? UNICEF, Save the Children, the IRC?
Yeah, on an ongoing basis, those of us who are regularly part of the community, we work really collaboratively. It's about saving kids, not about who saves kids. And so clearly we do divide and conquer, if you will, with various kinds of roles and responsibilities. For example, UNICEF, we're often called the plumbers of the UN. We do the water and sanitation aspects, and we create those child-friendly centers. Those are two of our linchpin programs.
Manuel, aren't you usually stationed in Algeria?
Yeah, that's correct. With what has happened, I've done a lot of child protection in emergencies, natural disasters, and conflict before. And therefore, I think there was a time to get all mobilized. And when I was asked, I just took the plane.
UNICEF has responded to many disasters. Are there particular challenges in responding to this one, this earthquake?
Well, I think...
Go ahead. Both of you can answer, of course.
Manuel, do you want to start?
Ahead. Go ahead.
The one thing I would say is obviously this emergency is unlike any others in terms of our access to that which you need to respond. We had that same size earthquake in California a couple of years back, and unfortunately 48 people perished, but 48 comparative to the 200,000 in Haiti tells you a lot about what didn't exist beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Where are the children living now, Manuel?
Well, the children are living, you know, some of them have managed to...
I think we're losing.
So during the day, you see people in the streets. That's normal. I think what is striking is when you look at the streets at night and you see that the people are still there and many of them still outside. Now, progressively, shelter is coming. Progressively, people sleep under one of the...
We're having a little problem with the phone reception here, but I gather that a lot of them are living in tent cities, and there have been stories of men coming into the camps and offering food and water if the kids come with them on trucks. No confirmed accounts, but Carol, is there any hard evidence that this sort of thing is happening?
You know, unfortunately, we see that kind of activity in the wake of every disaster. There are very well-meaning and good-intentioned people who come in and try to lure children away from the disaster site, again, with good intentions and with the hope of finding them a better place and space. But unfortunately, there are also those who are less good who come in with the intention of soliciting children, placing them into child prostitution and trafficking issues. It is why we create this space, to try to protect children.
So is this... offered a new opportunity for the kinds of people who have been accused of abducting Haitian children in the past?
Absolutely. You know, this is an opportunity in the wake of an emergency, when the documents are not right there, when people are still scrambling to get the systems operational. Again, many good-intentioned people come in and try to remove children and don't understand why we stop them. But even when you look at how many orphans there were in Haiti before the earthquake, there were, I believe, 360,000 registered orphans in the country. But two-thirds of those children were what we call economic orphans. They have parents who could no longer afford to support them. And so these are not children whose parents want them to be given to another family or taken out of the country in any way for altruistic reasons, never mind for trafficking. So there's a whole lot of issues that come into play when this in the wake of an emergency, when unfortunately oftentimes you find children who have been separated from their parents.
We're talking about Haiti's children on today's Underreported with Carol M. Stern, President and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, and with Manuel Fontaine of UNICEF. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, Manuel, Haitian officials are blocking international adoptions at the moment. Is that because it's still so difficult to track children and their relatives?
Yes, I see. You know, this is a very normal measure that they take in the wake of such an emergency and such a crisis. In all cases where there's a natural disaster like this, we know that it's extremely difficult to be sure that a child is actually an orphan. In many cases, in places like Aceh, in places like Bam, we found children sometimes, or parents to children, several weeks or months after the disaster. So at this stage, it's really impossible to be sure that a child who is unaccompanied and who is on his or her own is actually orphaned. So I think this is a protective measure for these children, but in a way, it's a protective measure for the parents as well and for everyone, because it's important to be sure that there's not a parent out there desperately looking for his or her own child. So in the meantime, we have to find interim care solutions and make sure they are protected. And that's a very normal and measure from the Haitian government.
Well, last year in Chad, which is close to where you're stationed in Algeria, there was a French group that was accused of taking children out and claiming that they were orphans. Last week, a church group from Idaho was caught trying to remove 33 Haitian children from the country. Do you think there's similar situations?
I mean, that's the risk, obviously. And again, you know, it's not a question, as Carol said, it's not a question of doubting the intentions of people. It's not the issue. It's just the fact that in both cases, but certainly in the case of Chad, it was clear that most of the children had parents, and parents who actually had been didn't understand exactly what the consequences of giving their children to a group were. So it is. There is a big risk, and this is why I think it's important to take such a measure, which doesn't mean that, of course, children are left on their own. It means they have to be cared for and protected very seriously here until a longer-term decision can be taken for them.
Now, Carol, is there a religious issue here? Haitians are mostly Catholics, and the church group was Baptist.
No, I don't think religion had anything in that sense to do with it. I do believe, though, it is oftentimes good intentions gone awry. And, you know, I'm a mom. I had the privilege to raise two birth children and one child who was given birth to by someone else. And I would no more want one of my three children taken from me than I would have wanted my third son to wake up one day and find out I took him from a family that could have been raising him this whole time. So, you know, again, good intentions gone awry. And I believe we in this country who are reaching out, many of us, I can't tell you the number of people have called asking, can we adopt one of these children? If we really truly want to be altruistic, let's support the parents so they're never in that position where they have to make a choice about their children. And no mom or dad should have to make that choice.
It's really difficult for African-American kids to be adopted in this country. Is there a bit of irony here that people want to adopt black children from Haiti but not from the United States?
Again, we're not an adoption agency, and so I'm really not, you know, I'm not in a position to talk to you about whether, you know, who will adopt who and who won't. We are an agency committed to child protection and to making sure that the children of Haiti are given ample opportunity to be reunited with their families, that they're protected in the meantime, that their existence is documented, and that they get everything that every child in this country deserves, or in any country around the world, and everything we'd want for our own children. These are not Haiti's children. These are children.
But weren't Haitian children facing all sorts of problems even before the quake? The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Slavery expressed concern about the practice in Haiti of sending children to live with others to do domestic work in exchange for food and education. Often those kids wound up just working as the equivalent of slaves. Does it make it harder to respond now to this crisis in Haiti?
Again, I think you look at Haiti, it is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere where parents have been forced to make these horrifically difficult decisions. You know, there was an interview with a mom I read in the Times this week, even, who did send her child to what she believed was a school that offered her child the opportunity for an education, only to learn later that's not what it was. So, you know, you're dealing in very critical, very difficult times. If there's a lesson to be learned here, it is that we need to wake up and care for this country. It's not acceptable. This is where it was before the earthquake, and there's an opportunity now to build it back better, and we need to be part of that.
Manuel, is this something that people are talking about a lot in Haiti at the moment?
Yes, absolutely, as you can imagine. I think it's interesting because a lot of people you talk to feel there is exactly that sense that maybe that's the time to do it, you know, to look at a different model and look differently. That maybe, what has happened is an absolute disaster, tragic, but at the same time that opens a number of opportunities and certainly attention and resources and expertise, and so that we can do something different. We can't build a system or accept a system that is where basically the only option for someone who can't care for his or her own child is to give the child away. I mean, I think this is it. And anything we can do in terms of support of families, whether that's cash transfers, whether that's other forms of social protection, are going to be really important. And that's the occasion of doing it. That's the time. So I think a lot of people feel this is the time to build a different Haiti.
Well, the United States State Department has said that it will commit more funds to fight child trafficking in Haiti. Is there a sense that in rebuilding the country there's an opportunity to address some of these problems that persisted before the quake?
Absolutely.
UNICEF has been there since the 40s, hasn't it?
Since 1949.
Addressing just these problems exacerbated by the quake?
Oh, yeah, all of the things that obviously impact children in a country where 50% of the population is children and the infrastructure was weak. So, yeah, we've been there doing all that we could. And yet, before the earthquake, only 54% of the country had access to clean water. So you begin to understand what was there and what needs to be rebuilt.
Thank you so much for talking with us. Carol M. Stern is president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Manuel Fontaine is a child protection expert who is working in Haiti for UNICEF at the moment. And it has been my great pleasure, despite this sad story, to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Manuel.